Maybe just allow the numbers to introduce themselves so that we can start to let's start with the history.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Chairperson. My name is Lee Boydinga from Audi. I am a
Let's give us a few.
I'm here with the Customer Information
No, I'm laughing not kidding because she just feels that I didn't work on that. She's not gonna work hard for her. You know, we totally forgot that there's no water there, that's what we're going to be fixing.
Human and social dynamics for a challenge. My colleague, Catherine, will take us through the presentation.
Thanks, Natasha. Perhaps just go to the outline of this presentation, give you a sense of how the presentation is going to unfold. Firstly, about setting the scene for the grant, so I'll just talk about the background, the context, and the grant proposition. And then I'll go to the scene and the research and innovation process layers for the grant challenge. And also briefly on what achievements we've made with the grant challenge thus far. And I'll also comment on a few issues like evidence-based policy making, the innovation narrative, and institutional narrative as well. And then I'll conclude with few remarks. As Nostranta sort of alluded to in her opening statement, this grant challenge has two focal points. The one is on a portfolio of work around the humanities and social sciences. And the second portfolio is referred to initiatives linked to the Innovation for Inclusive Development program. The philosophy of the grand challenge is relatively straightforward. We believe that the humanities and the social sciences have unique roles to play, in that they open up possibilities for imagining different kinds of futures, but they also deliberate alternative socio-technological pathways for countries as well. What's really important about this grand challenge is that it promotes responsible research and innovation. In other words, research innovation that is aligned with two societies' needs, expectations, and values. The grand challenge also analyzes and assesses the increasingly powerful roles of science and technology as agents of change in society as well as in the economy. It's probably wise to actually get a sense of what we mean by humanities and what we mean by social sciences, because we always get asked these questions when we do communication. There is no hard and fast rule about what the difference is between humanities and social sciences. This is just a working definition, which the research community is generally very comfortable with. The humanities explores what it means to be human. It makes sense of our lives and our place in the world. The social sciences, on the other hand, seeks to explore the observation and reflection, the processes that govern the behavior. So the onus here is on behavior of individuals and groups as well in society. Together, the humanities and social sciences help us to understand ourselves, our society, and also our place in the world. Almost every big societal challenge that we deal with in the country and globally as well needs to be looked at from the perspective of different disciplines, including the humanities and social sciences, also the STEM disciplines as well. And it's for this particular reason that in the Senior Innovation Plan, the humanities and social sciences have a home, an intellectual home in the grand challenge. This doesn't mean that the humanities and social sciences are not contributing to the other grand challenge areas as well. Because, if you look at things like energy security, climate change, etc., they do have human social dimensions there as well. But this grand challenge sort of situates the humanities and social sciences in the system of innovation. The DSC recognizes the importance of steering the national system of innovation.
Which state are
you in? The DSC recognizes the importance of strategically steering the national system of innovation to conserve the human and the social dimensions of science, of technology, and of innovation. But it's also about moving to a kind of big picture reflection on a set of crucial questions regarding science, technology, and innovation. Things like, how should science, technology, and innovation be fostered? How fast, why, and by whom? It's also important to interrogate questions about which innovation and for whom. These questions then bring wider the science and society considerations into the focus, and this provides the direction for this particular grand challenge. There is a growing consensus now in both the policy and the research community that we need to give greater consideration to cultural factors, institutional context, the way in which we discuss discussing and talk about science, technology, and innovation. And also the processes that accompany and embed techno-scientific innovation as well. Now, what does this do? It points to a need to actually accommodate broader societal aspirations, our values, systems of interest, as well as linguistic culture in the country as well. The Grand Challenge then provides a platform for addressing the nature and possibilities for the humanities and social sciences, and the roles that the humanities and social sciences can play in addressing social issues, but also government priorities as well. For example, the 9-point plan, the triple challenge, and other SDG strategic documents and governance. And also deepening our understanding of the human condition. So then we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is the value proposition for the human and social development study challenge? Well, I'm quickly running down to the stage, and I hope that you can see that fosters research in the human and the social dimensions of science, technology, and innovation. But it also broadens the notion of innovation to a different set of the humanities and the social sciences. It gives them a space to contribute to innovation itself. And it also underscores the need for more sort of serious scrutiny of the way we understand science and the way we understand society as well. It puts the spotlight on the humanities and social sciences as producers of both policy relevant knowledge but also socially relevant knowledge. While social innovations have become very important now for recent policy discourse, if you look at the documents that are emanating from the European Commission and also from the Science Foundation in the US, you will hear the concept called social innovation. But the question is, what is it for a country like South Africa? And for us, the humanities and social sciences can play an important role in unpacking what social innovation means. For instance, when you look at things like solutions that come from academia, that come from the research community, how they address social needs, humanities and the social sciences can play that kind of role. But we also have to ask ourselves, can the humanities and social sciences also play a role in co-shaping the nature and orientation of techno-scientific innovations as well? So not just social innovations that we can contribute to, but also in ways that techno-scientific innovations are shaped. I think most of us in this room would agree that South Africa is a plural environment. I mean, that's just a plural. So we comprise different value systems, different cultures, and different histories. And this diversity is very important because it has different values, different interests, life situations, experiences, cultural backgrounds, but also valuation practices as well. These and many other aspects can matter profoundly in appreciating the social and the new dimensions. Now, nurturing more diverse approaches to innovation, because we also only consider the technological, the social innovation, the organizational innovation, the process innovation as well. And these things allow us to be able to better respond to developmental challenges in society, social uncertainty, social complexity. So it provides different perspectives to some of the development problems in terms of skills. Fostering diversity provides a rich resource for us to actually foster more robust but also more resilient innovation pathways into the future. The other very important thing about diversity by including different disciplines, by including issues around interdisciplinarity, is that it allows us to actually resist that powerful process of blocking, being trapped into a particular mode of thinking. The reason why this is very important is because by breaking that locking process, you're able to catalyze more transformative forms of innovation. This is precisely the kind of innovation that South Africa needs and sort of stage in its development objective. Because if you actually want to make a step change in the national development plan, innovation is an absolutely crucial component. Now, opening research and innovation to societal concerns is a very important move to be pursued in order to improve both the quality but also the relevance of research and innovation in society. I'm sure most of the honorable members of the portfolio committee, even Gavis a lot, as well as the chairperson as well. There is a growing feeling in society that scientific research is actually very abstract or geared towards cost. in a sense that it is not sufficiently geared towards the needs of the economy of the child. And that's for these reasons you have calls ringing the house across the policy community, but also in the corridors of the research community themselves, that science needs to get closer to the citizens. But in order for science to get closer to the public, science needs to open up, you know, new spaces, broad spaces, more diverse spaces, and in order to address science and society issues. Now this grand challenge provides a kind of bridge between science and society. It enables them, us to do that kind of thing. In a country like South Africa, which, as I said earlier on, is a fairly daunting set of development challenges, obviously emanating from our history, there is a need to create a
You can come. You can say hi even if you're with a red t-shirt.
You can't
already. No, I look like it.
They're about to say you are a seller.
This is precisely the kind of human social dynamic I was talking about. In a country like South Africa, like I said, you know, where we have that sort of very daunting set of development challenges that kind of emanated from our social history, we need to create an intellectual space, you know, where we can have sort of critical reflection and thematic analysis as well. So this grand challenge provides that kind of space. But it also fosters reflexivity, the ability to actually critically reflect on science and society issues. It also provides a unique sort of antenna function for the DFT to get a sense of what society's current and future demands are for the analysis and social analysis as well. Gives us a kind of thing, you know, sense of that. But it also addresses societal challenges. And our feeling is that within the DFT is that in order to understand these things, we also need to understand these are first principles. We need to understand human aspirations. What do people actually want in society? What are the institutional constraints, the social constraints, the value choices, but very important as well, the power dynamics in society. And this grand challenge provides a platform to broaden and to enrich the conversation. You know, when we talk about science, when we talk about technology and about innovation, a different and diverse perspective on it. So I'm now page 17. This grand challenge has four research and innovation focus areas: science, technology, and society, the dynamics of human and social behavior, social cohesion and identity, societal change and the evolution of the modern society. The grand challenge has five thematic areas which speak about those four research and innovation focus areas that I've just mentioned. These are understanding society, social diversity, health and well-being, understanding behavior, science, technology, and society. The first theme on understanding society has a number of sub-themes under it. It gives you a sense of flavor of the kinds of research and innovation that you support. Sociocultural change, demographic change, urbanization, poverty, inequality, and social exclusion, crime and violence, economic and social development, children, youth, and families. Theme two is on social diversity. These are what social scientists refer to as identity markers. That's what gives us our unique identity as individuals. And these refer to culture and identity, social cohesion, religion, language, ethnicity, race, class, gender, migration, values, needs, and worldview. Theme 3 deals with health and well-being, and that includes aging, childcare, the social determinants of healthcare, consumption and lifestyle, quality of life, and welfare. Theme 4, understanding behavior, movement, the problem, decision-making, influences on behavior, relationships, responding to change, response to risk and the adoption of risky behavior, changing behavior for public and educational and health outcomes. And the final theme is on science, technology, and society. This is where the look at maternal science and their innovation for inclusive development is actually situated. The relationship between scientific systems, technological systems, and society. The ways in which advances in science and technology shape culture, values, and institutions are very important how those things also in turn shape science, technology, and innovation. So it's a kind of a mutual relationship. The one influences the other. The risk that science and technology may pose to democracy, to the environment, and also to human value as well. And now we can very briefly take it to what we actually achieve with this grand challenge. I've said this to you, I've given you a clear understanding of what the grand challenge is about. I've divided it into three sort of categories: knowledge generation, human capital development, and policy outreach. First, I'll go through the knowledge generation component. This grand challenge has funded 39 scholarship chairs in the humanities and social sciences. It's awarded 36 senior research grants. Funded 9 research excellence awards. Established 4 community university partnerships. These community university partnerships are established at rural-based universities. The University of Venda, Limpopo, Fort Hare, as well as the University of Zululand as well. It gives the university a platform to actually engage the communities that surround that university. I mean, I think most of us are aware that in these kinds of rural-based universities, the communities around the universities are very poor communities. And they experience a lot of, sort of challenges, both social challenges, but also economic challenges as well. And that university, that ivory tower on the hill, that's where, where the knowledge is being generated and where the solutions are. And it's good to actually get those two constituencies together to enable them to actually address the challenge. And it gives a sense to the community as well. That university has a utilitarian purpose. It's not just a ivory tower and kind of separated from their everyday life. The grand challenge has also funded 2 research infrastructure projects. We published 189 research articles and books, presented 45 peer-reviewed conference papers, published 10 research briefs, and produced 19 technical reports. We've supported 498, close to 500 now, postgraduate students, funded 71 postdoctoral fellowships at the university, and awarded 261 internships. These internships are research internships, because what we're trying to do here is to build the next generation of scholars and researchers in the humanities and social sciences. It's about giving the master's and PhD students an opportunity to actually communicate themselves to the research environment to ensure that they are ready for those kinds of scenarios. Now I'm going on to the policy outputs of this grand challenge. The grand challenge has convened 135 policy dialogue workshops and seminars, and it's produced 74 policy relevant knowledge products. Now these knowledge products would include things like policy makes, booklets, policy briefs, and rapid evidence policy knowledge. We've also created one platform, networking platform, to engage policymakers. In other words, this platform will bring researchers and policymakers together with an ability to actually feed the findings of the research into policymakers. So this is part of the evidence-based policy initiative of this grand challenge. We've also developed 10 decision support tools for improved service delivery decision makers. I'll come to these tools later on in the presentation. And we've supported 1 longitudinal cross-sectional survey and funded 2 evaluation and impact assessment studies. It's probably good for the honorable members in the portfolio committee to get a sense of what are the themes, what are the kind of research that this grand challenge is supporting, and it gives you a sense of flavor of this. I'll just go through very quickly now some of the examples of the research chairs that we supported. I think the titles of chairs gives you a sense of the research agenda. Poverty, land and agrarian studies at UWC, social change at Fort Hare, applied poverty reduction assessment at UKGN, uni mobility and urban diversity at BIT, development planning and modeling at BIT. This is one of the commissioners of National Development Plan, who's now the chair. Critical diversity studies at BIT, social policy and planning at UNISA, African languages and multilingualism at Rome, African diplomacy and foreign policy at UJ, and econometric modeling at UPT. And also now some of the examples of the research grants that we've awarded. These would be 2 things like South Africa's Unfolding Human and Social Dynamics at UPT, Science, Technology and Innovation and Socioeconomic Development at UPT, Social Cohesion at UPT, Mapping the 3rd African Diaspora at UPT, Health Promotion to Reduce HIV at Stellenbosch University, inclusive innovation that faces our peace, modern ways of health that we look at sex, nonviolence, equality, and social well-being at UW, and youth at the market at the some examples of government plus policy workshops that we've funded. This is very important here. This is the government cluster policy workshop is kind of a unique sort of platform that was developed by in conjunction with the HSLC, where we would engage with a government cluster, for example, a social cluster, an economic cluster, present to them, find out from them what are the key policy and strategic sort of issues that are going to be discussed in that cluster during the course of the year, and then try to convene what we call a government cluster workshop, bring in invite members of the government cluster, and also bring in researchers who are working on that topic, which the cluster is currently interested in, and bring the two communities together to actually engage, so that the policymakers get a sense of what the cutting edge research findings, but the researchers themselves are also gaining value from that, because they get a sense of what how difficult it is to operate in government. In terms of, you know, one cannot just simply take research findings and, you know, put it forward to policy. You have to consider a number of things. I mean, the issue around resources, buy-in from society, from communities, and so forth. So it's a learning experience from both sides. And here, I mean, of course, the topics that we dealt with during the last, what is it, 3 years now? Transformative social policy and the developing state, tackling inequality, what can we learn from social and economic policies of the BRICS, exploring the opportunities of an Africa-based system of innovation, education and skill development for employment, the state of families in South Africa, this was something that was requested by the Department of Social Development, child health, improving the quality of care during the first 1,000 years, primarily the Department of Health, but also Urban Development as well, and rural development and job creation. Some of the research and policy seminars that we've convened, BRICS, inequality and development challenges, the attainment of MDG targets, the role of government in an unequal world, fostering co-rural and rural innovation systems in South Africa, social polarization and migration, land and agrarian reform, linking the South African system of innovation with the rest of Africa, policy level indicators to monitor household food security basis in South Africa, and policy dialogues that have been convened include SDI for the creation of sustainable livelihoods, human settlement dynamics, evidence-based deliberation and evidence-informed policy development, practical strategies for developing basic energy needs, the efficacy of point-of-use water systems, extending access of ICT connectivity across rural communities in South Africa, and the other example is around the policy briefs that we published in and disseminate the policy community. It includes innovation for poverty alleviation, the gender dimension of food security in Africa, women's participation in industrial science, engineering and technology, technology for rural innovation and economic development, social innovation in South Africa's rural municipalities, promoting innovation for inclusive rural transformation in South Africa, harnessing the economic and social benefits of open innovation in South Africa. As I mentioned earlier on in the presentation, I said to you that this RAND Challenge has two portfolios, the one on the humanities and social development, and the other on innovation and inclusive development. Now, the innovation for inclusive development component of the RAND Challenge supports community enterprise development. Yet, the focus is on technology transfer and technology demonstration in primarily rural areas. The objective of this is to enable and support rural-based enterprises to improve their productivity, but through innovative technology solutions. Now, there are three portfolios of work within this community enterprise component. The first one is on agro-processing. The agro-processing activities are, in fact, aligned with the AAP, the Agriculture Policy Action Plan. And it includes sort of issues around things like, you know, indigenous meat and vegetables, orange, fresh sweet potatoes, medicinal plants, for example, devil's claw, African ginger, Sutherlandia, citizen, Pedagogia, but also essential oils as well. And one example of essential oils would be the second portfolio focuses on aquaculture. And currently, the work is on abalone and duck cod. And this aquaculture portfolio is And then the final portfolio is on nutraceuticals and medicinal pumps. And this is linked to the DFT IKF strategy. The next slide basically shows the kind of a national geographic footprint of community enterprises in South Africa. And as you can see, over the long period of time now, the DFT has supported community enterprises actually spread out throughout the rural areas in South Africa. Unfortunately, this was an animated slide, so because we don't have an OLED projector, I can't actually go into it. But I think you get a sense that there are a number of projects and they are spread throughout the country. And there's a little bit of photographs of some of the community enterprises that are supported by DFT. I won't talk a great deal about this. I mean, the funds are coming later on and provide the necessary details. So I've now moved on to the slide that is on examples of innovation to service delivery. This is also a portfolio of work that features in the innovation for the inclusive development component of the grant program. The objective was is innovative technology solutions to improve access and quality of basic services delivery. This portfolio has two pillars. The one is on technology demonstration and the other is on technology transfer. The technology transfer focuses on water resource management and wastewater treatment. And technology demonstration includes work on sanitation, energy, innovation, innovative building technology, and basic education. Obviously, we heard of the Cotton Bubble Rural Education Initiative, so this will feature in the underpinning education component. I also would like to provide you an example of a center of research excellence in the humanities and social sciences, but also an example of a recently awarded flagship project as well. The DST NRF Center for Research Excellence in Human Development, this is co-hosted by BITS and UKZN. Studies child development and family well-being, including how the disruptive effects of poverty and lack of protection can be overcome. What's very important about this Center for Research Excellence is that it demonstrates the power and the valence of interdisciplinarity, because this center adopts a multi and interdisciplinary approach. In other words, we join knowledge and expertise from social, psychological, and biological, and public health disciplines. The flagship project on critical thought in African humanities was recently established at the University of the West Coast. And it's a very important platform for scholarly exchange, artistic creation, and public inquiry into African political subjects. So it's so early days for this flagship project. I'm sure over time we can meet the portfolio. And I just wanted to comment on evidence-based documentation. Our sense is that, I think now there's a general sense in both government and academia as well that the best policy making needs to be informed by high quality scholarly research that's evaluated robustly, but also that objectives to independent. The humanities and social sciences have a role to play in providing that kind of knowledge to decision makers in order to formulate policies that not just anticipate, not just respond to social change and transformation, but anticipate them. The grand challenge strengthens this evidence-based policy making by establishing research policy dialogue forums. I just mentioned a policy of them, the seminars, the policy dialogues, the workshops, the policy views, also the research for web-based research and policy maker interaction as well. But it also does this through decision protection. And I just want to give you some of the examples of decision support tools that are supported by the innovation for inclusive development component of the grant. The first one is what is called STEPECO, which is an acronym that stands for Spatial and Temporal Evidence for Planning in South Africa. The objective of this is to improve spatial planning and analysis, but also to address spatial marginalization challenges that stem from apartheid. The SFSA decision support tool is linked to NPSS outcomes, especially rural development and aid to human settlement. The sanitation evaluation tool evaluates innovative sanitation technologies to inform implementation decisions at the municipal level. And it's aligned to NPSS outcome 7, which, as I said, rural development, aid to human settlement, and 9 is responsible local government systems. Total cost of ownership advises on the implementation of ICT roll-up in basic education. Talks to MCS of outcome one. E-Help deals with the rapid screening of disabilities and learning challenges in school. MCS outcome on basic education and health. And the risk and vulnerability atlas. The objective here is to enable municipalities to predict and respond to climate change related challenges. It speaks to a number of MCS outcomes, rural development, human settlement, response of local government system and the environment. And then the final one is on a rural innovation assessment tool. The objective of this toolkit is to assess rural innovation systems. Now this is very important because you want to get a sense of whether, first of all, whether we actually have rural innovation systems, rural innovation systems in place, and secondly, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, are they actually fit for purpose? Because ultimately, you know, the objective would be to put together a package of interventions within the DSP which can strengthen and support rural innovation systems. I'm going to make some comments about the innovation management system. These are issues which are raised to a large extent by, you know, confirmation, also by the academic community as well. You get a sense now in society as well as in, you know, population and researchers as well, that they say that we need to think about the way we talk about innovation. The concept needs to have a much more broader concept, something more than just technology innovation. And as I mentioned previously, the growing importance of social innovation in society. But I think this big development challenges cannot be fixed by technology innovation. Ultimately, they only involve people's actions, their behavior, their understanding, and their perception of the world. The humanities and social sciences community are well positioned to demonstrate the relevance of different kinds of innovation for tackling complex challenges faced by society. And researchers are now saying that, you know, we need to actually provide more sort of consideration to important factors like social issues involved in the development, but also the adaptation of innovations as well. Understanding the social factors which largely determine the success or failure of innovation, as well as the ultimate future, but also very important social impact. Because there's a general sense that if you don't take these factors into account, there's a very real risk in buying into a kind of a convenient fantasy in which technical solutions on their own are a sufficient condition to actually address complex societal problems. Our sort of argument is that technology is often a necessary condition, but it is rarely a sufficient condition to actually address society. Because it would be very nice if with a technology to solve poverty, to solve inequality. You know. So that just doesn't happen. I will point out comments on interdisciplinarity, because, you know, when you talk about humanities and social sciences, it's very important to bear in mind that we don't subscribe to a view that, you know, on the one hand you have the humanities and social sciences, and diametrically opposed to that you have the same discipline, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and where you have these two disciplines to, you know, fighting with each other, antagonistic and so on. We don't agree with that at all. Because there's growing evidence now to suggest that there are a lot of mutual interdependencies and synergies between the STEM disciplines and the humanities disciplines. We appreciate, for instance, that innovation tends to occur at the spaces where different disciplines collide and ideas combine. That's where the cutting edge innovation is currently taking place. And I mean, if you read journals like Nature, it's clearly a problem. We also now understand that this research tends to be conducted by teams with a diverse set of research, not monodisciplinary research. Solutions to the problems of applying science and technology to human well-being can only be found by integrating research from across the STEM disciplines and humanities and political science. This then makes it very important and urgent to integrate research and to avoid non-fragmentation. I think this is one of the things that we're trying to do in the DSP. What are the directions then in terms of what is the future action for this journal? Firstly, I'll go through the management of the social science portfolio and the organization of the inclusive development portfolio. So the humanities and social science is a grand challenge for continuous promotion support. High-quality, basic, strategic, and applied research. Invest in high-quality postgraduate and postdoctoral research training. Inform decision-making and wider society. and promote public engagement with the management of tech society. The innovation to include the development component of the grant challenge continues to enhance the understanding and extend the inspiration of innovative solutions to achieve inclusive development, to continue engagement with the different set of stakeholders, but also to continue to produce evidence for informing and influencing service delivery decisions, and to demonstrate innovative solutions to improve access to and quality of services. To summarize then, the human social dimension challenge steers the national system organization to think about what is the place of science, technology, innovation in society. How does science, technology, and innovation intersect with social life in new ways? How powerful forces such as norms, worldviews, power relations, and social and cultural structures shape science, technology, and innovation? But also the inverse, how science and technology and innovation in turn shape these forces, social forces? How science, technology, and innovation is embedded in political, economic, and social context? And how can science, technology, and innovation respond to societal changes and societal constructions? The Grand Challenge provides a platform for science to become much more reflective about its role in society, but also to take greater cognizance of what kind of impact science, technology, and innovation make on society. The Grand Challenge provides the humanities and social sciences sector with a platform to play an essential role in addressing societal challenges on the basis. But also, very importantly, this Grand Challenge enables the humanities and social sciences to challenge widely held assumptions and beliefs. For example, critically rethinking and redefining so-called basic accepted notions of what we mean by things like sustainability, by energy, by it also contributes to global standards such as climate change, poverty, inequality, social marginalization, resource depletion, urbanization. Our argument is that knowledge transfer and public engagement will offer ways to realize the contributions of the humanities and social sciences. We have to find ways, however, to better communicate and showcase the results of humanities and social sciences to the public and also to policymakers. We have achieved a great deal, but there is still a lot to be done with this last Grand Challenge, and looking forward to this Grand Challenge. So I share with that, I'm looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hartley. It's my strong credit to come up to the session. That is very interesting for Dr. Hartley. And maybe let me test my understanding. I do understand one of the things. As far as I'm concerned, it's just time to bring science closer to the communities of South Africa. And in doing so, one has got to understand the playground where you are actually being. And I think probably one of our shortcomings is that we should not understand our country. And we tend to think that we can do one size that fits everything. Yet we are so diverse and so different, especially culturally. And we tend to always think that the differences are just between the colors, the white and black, but it goes beyond that. And our understanding of science is that science is about technical things. Yes, it goes beyond technical things. From what I understand, having read your document, and I think that's why I think this is very important for South Africa, but I'm not sure if we do understand all of our participation. Not only that we do understand, but do we understand our country and its challenges? I think there's a lot of work that we have done this. I'm not sure whether the thing that is going on is for us. I think it's connected with this. Because there's one doctor who's there. I'm not sure whether it's a professor or a doctor, but he's from the Pope. He's based there. And he always talks about some of the things that they are doing in rural areas all over South Africa, but we're coaching some of the things that they've done in the open. So we're looking at that differently as communities. And in fact, this is going to have an impact because whether you like it or not understanding that it's not only about technical things, but science goes beyond technical things. But one impact that thing has is that even as you are underdeveloped, we tend to be involved in science. In one way or another, we don't know that it's science. We think that it's something that we are doing, but it brings solutions to our problems. But if our interpretation of the other rules interpretation is that when you have something, the man interprets the witchcraft, the other man interprets another one, yet it's all science. And if somebody could make us understand that we're still in the same direction, it will actually help us in some of these things that are abnormal, where people tend to use these innovations to make money, and they become concerned about making money rather than bringing solutions to people. And they start saying that this one can cure whatever. Like this thing that has been happening to the people with albinos, that you think that the skin can do something. It's part of science, but it's not explained, but they are driven by making money. They're not driven by bringing a particular solution. I think this is very key for those parents. But in any case, thank you very much, Dr. Petrus. And thank you very much, Mr. Kawazai. Remember, that's the good rendition. I tend to think that those good renditions are ahead of what we call the hard copies. Those are what hard copies. I think that there's not a need another paper. When things are back to normal, maybe we need to get closer to now and do some fire solutions to what is going on. But they don't know that they say this is not political. We're just doing it as administrative. So we are not going to, and we don't want to be involved there. That's why we're putting it as our job. So that is numbers. I'm thinking that we should have another chance, even if it's next year, where we call them properly so that we can get the detail of what they're trying to present, even in a summarized form. So, that is, if you have any questions of clarity or any comments, feel free to do that. They are ready for us. In an abnormal
situation. I suppose you are way forward, sir. But I appreciate it.
The only thing that we remember about her is that she said it's people from other people who do that by saying no. What do you say? Yes. So before you heard that, that other people, because I hope your new one is not for her. She was saying no before she said yes. That's coming from you must watch it. It may have been watched by I didn't know that you were watching it. But I'm glad by saying no before I say yes. Okay, man.
Thank you, Chad, and thank you for the presentation. I agree with you. Another time that we another time for you to come into the session. I do make some notes. I just need some clarification. When you speak of policy and health, for instance, on the policy outputs, it's like for instance, when you talk about negative platform to engage policymakers, so mine was, how do you describe policymakers? Who are the policymakers? Do you regard the ANC as the majority as policymakers, and do they get engaged in what's saying those policy outputs and so forth? We have problems with energy. We are now facing possible looks watershed use and the ICT and the other colleagues that are serving are being involved. We see a lot of non-connectivity in our community. So in this policy dialogue with the relevant departments, and what happens then, because we warn them of possible dangers like the water issues and the connectivity, and do they respond to that? On the community enterprises, I just wanted to find out, I see that you have different species or from the medicinal heads that you identified, and I just wanted to find out about Moringa, and also the examples of decision-making tools. If you look at the response on our community as much, then maybe you will start to predict and respond to climate change related changes. Workshop them, we take them through adapting the curriculum and apply for students. And lastly, when we speak of engaging, we were talking about engaging local government in the developing. Economic development or something like this. And I just wanted to find out, for instance, how Gini has got now within their 9-point plan on the issue of
of development of the local economy, township economy. Is such innovation and such you take that into consideration to help on the supporting local economic development, working with local government. So I wanted to find out for the housing promotion of the economy, which I think is a brilliant idea. How do you get involved, or how can you get involved if you're not
I think you should respond to in fact the last part that Mary talked about is the one that makes us all the things that somehow we don't understand our country. When we talk about the historical disadvantages, we either say rural areas or we say the very urban areas. But we forget that there are cities there. Even the way they came up, the rural room is where most of us come from, everybody come from. But because of it was settled next to towns for economic purposes. Now the formation of those is different. And now it has gone to an extent that they are certainly different, but they belong to the historical disadvantage of both of them. And the way we're going to handle that is slightly different. I was very worried that there were new ones. You were trying to argue with her, but the community that you don't come to that point where the ANC is bigger than government or government. We don't know that these days. Yeah, let's leave that to you before. Okay, you can respond.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for the question.
Okay.
First I would probably take some of the questions around the issue around Moringa. Mention about the sufficient support to our efforts and also the cartoon promotion of the township economy as well. But what I'll do is I'll try and address the issue around, you know, you mentioned this to me, how do we engage on the first of all, you know, we need to go back a step and find out how is the topic for a policy dialogue or for a government cluster policy dialogue. These are at an applied financial as well, they demand of that. In other words, government requests and then you put on the agenda as well. Provided that it's aligned with the universal dynamics and so on. And normally the sector will take the lead in actually identifying who would be the key participants as well. Our job in the Department of Transportation is in identifying the resources, the centers. We would then sort them from universities, from class councils, sometimes even overseas as much as required. In terms of, but what we would also do as well, we try and make sure that when we get a list of the participants from the government departments in terms of who should be invited, who should speak and so on, we make sure that, you know, we have a balanced perspective. You know, you don't have a one-sided perspective. So remember that in what I mentioned previously in the Grand Challenge, when you're debating, when you're reflecting on a very sort of complex issue, you want people to also have some opinions as well. Sometimes even controversial views are, you know, encouraged, you know, provided they're not destructive, and they add to the knowledge that's generated in the current. Whether we actually would, you know, send out invitations to political parties, normally that doesn't happen, but I take your point about saying, you know, when you raise the issue about who are policy actors, like for instance, when you think about the next percent, the circle challenge, who's actually crafted that? That's crafted through, you know, the ANC's hotline and so forth. So it might be something that we think about. I don't want to give you a quick response now, but it's something that we need to actually reflect on. Because I think you provided a different dimension to the debate, something that I personally haven't considered before. So can I just leave that enough? But I mean, when you call us the next time you're home, you start asking what do you recommend this topic. And then you mentioned the issues around the examples of policy dialogue. You know, we talked about basic energy needs, quantities, water systems, and IT connectivity. What I need to make clear to you now is that you are aware that, you know, in the DSP, there is water resource management and wastewater and wastewater as well. And waste is one of the key components of the global change. So they will be able to provide you with a lot of detail about the scope of work around that within the DST. But again, like I said to you, and also even with ITT as well, the DST and ITT roadmap. And these kinds of policy dialogues that we have actually fit into those processes, but we provide the human and social dimensions of these challenges. So our colleagues in the other sections in the DST are working specifically on these issues. They get a sense of how energy is situated in society, you know, what are the societal concerns, how does society respond to the energy challenges, but also issues around the scarcity of water and so forth. So that's our responsibility. We would not take the lead though with those issues. And then the
second question. Yeah. Just to add to in terms of what we also do with the policy seminar that we do, sometimes we build on the work that we've done for this. For example, last year, for the past year, the project that we worked on, which is called the Sokolov project. And the DST team, we initiated the project in support of the 2004 IT for the integration of IT innovation. And we did the project, one of the elements was looking at how IT should be best integrated into the machine learning process. So we did that. And when we had a series of policy dialogues last year and the year before last, we assisted them in terms of even getting an audience from people who are outside government, like NGOs who work in the IT and education space. And that process then led into the coalition parties process in terms of the rollout of activities in the education. So working with the relevant department sometimes is based on the work that is done in the department, where we say that this is what is done, this is the evidence, let's engage, and these are the consultations. And in terms of how they take that up, sometimes we have instances where they then say, we like what you said to us, for example, on community advice in terms of how to do it out. And also in terms of the way that we do with different departments, now we're getting onto the content of course too. What we normally do is start at national level with the lead department, going to provinces and then municipalities. So when we talk about decision support tools, we stick to the relevant segment. For example, in terms of the one that talks to social emergency, special learning, we are in communication with the Department of Human Development and the Department of Social Development and Learning Form. But also at municipal level, when we introduce this tool, it's also for us to understand that it may have been conceptualized as well by a scientist, but let's make it practical, let's learn how we take it and make it appropriate for municipalities and capacity is one of the areas that we look at in doing that. So we do this support, and in our position and mandate for the SP, we understand that when we come up with this solution, the ultimate responsibility in terms of scaling up or rolling out is not the DSP, it's the lead department. So we work with them in terms of doing that. And as far as the work that we've been doing in terms of rural development, it has remained mostly biased on rural areas in support of the comprehensive rural development program. But we are looking at the township economy, which is an issue for us. And we are currently, even we've reviewed and revised the approach we have been using in terms of innovation for local economic development, in that moving the next stage that we're moving to the township economy as a priority for the next year. And in terms of modeling, I'm looking at sometimes called miracle plans because we say they use only every part of the plan. I do not have at this point detailed information in terms of the actual project because there are other units in the department that are in there. But it's information that we can provide when we have the engagement next year. Also, I think there's something in terms of how we work with rural areas. My colleague emphasized that we have a tool that we call the Rural Innovation Management Tool, where we do innovation in terms of assessment, in terms of how innovation is understood, because we understand that the way most of us perceive and understand innovation is very limited. And sometimes that even has implications on our innovative edge at the time. So we are now, we continue to work with rural areas in terms of doing the rural innovation assessment, but also supporting practical innovation. Practical innovation, the concept really is that there are innovations in South Africa that happen within the formal space, coming from certain countries, from high education institutions, but then there is innovation that's happening in the informal space. And in that regard, we know to whether we support it, whether it's done by other institutions, for example, the CDC in Victoria. And we are working with them in terms of advancing the world, the last generation project. And example in that is the work that we bring on international relationships, where I think it was last month or November, October or September, where one of the products, Arabic Commander, our project was launched. It's called Moroccan Food. So it's a partnership in the field of Arabic. Because the beauty of that project is that we have a French council that works with the community and the university, the consortium. And when you go back to the white paper, it calls for that multidisciplinary approach to address the situation of the problems that we face. And
I think we take it that we need to have another connected maybe let us look at as we see, let us look at the challenges that probably will happen. That probably we don't think that you'll be able to address that. But I think the one that I'm thinking of, I'm not thinking of the map as the most important, as the most non-important, but I see that the problem of TFT in how you are working with other structures. Because you are connected to the scientists, the people who come up with innovations, but the way you are trying to connect with communities is through other departments, especially the professionals as well. But they might not have the same attitude about science and technology as we have. And as a result, not as a result, but they still have the same attitude that science and technology is for the elite. And it needs to be done in another place, not with them. And the same thing when you're talking about the one, it's exactly the same, because I don't think the development of education in the Ethiopian has taken it with the same that it should take it with. And unfortunately, at the FT, you can't, you have no powers to force them. They are autonomous. They don't report to you. You can't force them. You can see what you want to do. You can see the importance. But they are not to the same importance. They are important. They are important, but money is the multiple brother, not this. And the other things, they will do it because they give their money, but they won't do it with the passion that they would have done it if they understood the science and technology. I think that one of the challenges, the other challenge is that it's a very on the policy that I think, let's leave out the hello follow about the weekend, about this government, this agency. But the key thing is that the policy, most of the time, comes from the leader, the executive authority of a particular department. They are the people who come up with policy. Now, it depends on them. Whether are they passionate? Yes. I don't think they understand how important innovation and science is. So when they come up with policy, they might neglect the policy to come with their own policy. Because of not understanding how important, because my belief is that science actually comes up, the science and innovation comes up solutions. The fact that I've got to do that I must use a program is because I want a solution to my flu. I'm looking for a solution to my flu. And the thing that I think about is on program, it's science hidden in trying to get a solution. So science always brings solutions, but some of us, we don't think that it's even policy making, they are trying to bring a solution to a problem in your country, and we have been put as an executive authority to say, make solutions for this problem, for the big gap between the rich and the poor. So it's another challenge. And the other challenge, I think, it's a big one, and it's political. Most of the people who have got the technical know-how of science and some of the solutions are the people that and now they have agreed that those who have been oppressed, they can live and be there and be earnestly and be whatever. But some of them have identified is that they don't know science, they don't know innovation. We are going to remain as officials, and we know science, we know innovation. And let me make an example. You look at the electricity problem. The electricity problem was going on, and we had load shedding. But I don't think the big solution that came, the only solution that came, was to say, let's get some engineers, let's change a few engineers in what is it called? When I'm modifying, there's few engineers that were changed. Arab came in. Have you ever heard of it? It has gone down. There's nothing big that has happened. But it means there are people who have got a technical know-how. We decided to deliberately leave certain things and allow things to happen. And in fact, now that it seems as if it's quiet in electricity, now it's going on to water. And even in water, you might find that we don't have a problem with water per se. But there are certain people who have got the technical know-how. And they are confusing those who are supposed to make policy. They make them confused. And then it becomes havoc. Everybody in process, like a we don't know what to do. And the small thing is that we don't understand the innovation there, the innovation that we could do. Because we're afraid of science, we're afraid of innovation. We think that they belong to science and technology. And we depend on analysis, on certain people who've got the technical know-how, who know how important that is, but they don't give us the whole information. They just part of the information, and we understand. I'm not saying I'm right, what I'm saying, but I'm saying it's one of the things that, and I'm trying to say, we've got a challenge in understanding science. That's why I like your presentation. I want you to come back. You don't have to join our policy, but you give us information so that we can, without going to the wicked debate, but the people who are in government that were voted in, rightly or wrongly, were voted in ANC, and were putting people in the executive authority ANC. So our job is to make ANC to understand what science and technology is all about. So we've got to make them understand so that when they make policies that are going to be informed by science and innovation. I might be wrong in what I'm saying, but I think it's one of the things. I've got a belief myself, I have a belief, but since whether it's the unconventional science or the conventional science, all we are trying to do when you use science, you want to bring a solution to a challenge. Now, if that is the situation, everybody has got to take it that I've got to understand science. Because if it's a solution, it brings solution. And it makes me a lateral thinker. The mathematics makes me a lateral thinker. So that's where part of the challenge is. And it's for us politicians to undo that misunderstanding and make ANC, which is a government now, to understand that if you don't get closer to science and technology or understand how science is working, you're not going to be able to bring solutions to most of the things that are going on. So thank you very much. Do you want to have a comment, one cover that?
How we work with other departments. In instances where we have projects with departments, normally what we do, we sign a bilateral agreement with each level, and sometimes some of them are delegated to the ministerial level. But over and above bilateral agreements, there's normally a benefit, a sheet. For example, the example that you made is that when we started doing this project in the beginning, we have an agreement, a principal agreement with the provincial sportsman association and the national sportsman association for them to one accept that they are partners in this project, even if they are not necessarily co-funding, but make official available for the project at each level. So we have the support. But it is right that we do not have control in terms of overnight. You can sign an agreement, you can agree to a joint allocation, but we do not have control as to whether at the end someone takes what or not. Because they come back and say, we would love to take what, but we do not have money for it.
If you were there, if you were there when the minister was there, then they see. It was very clear, as they were talking, that they knew exactly what the people were going to do. But the Department of Education was just following because they were already there. But I was there. I did pick up the person from one of the education at Science and Technology. They understood what they were doing. But education was just reminded to improve their school. For them, it was not the same person. That was my analysis as I was sitting there listening to them.
Okay, and then also try, in terms of what we, because we also try and monitor the space that we were seeing. For example, I think it was this idea that the Minister of Human Settlement in a budget vote spoke to invasion in the EU of Human Settlement. This year also the President and the Minister of Konyan as well hosted a Sanitation Innovation Summit in Devon, which is a strategic business entry. So we are seeing that there is a continual increase in the appreciation of innovation, because most of us appreciate that most of the challenges that we have cannot be solved using conventional approaches, using innovative, but multidisciplinary approaches that are not necessarily just guided and deemed and limited by technology. And we know to what you said that maybe this is for us the challenge from you that we take in terms of how we make sure that there's an increased appreciation and understanding science, technology, innovation and how it relates to society, and also the link, as Shaker said earlier, between the policymakers, I say that the policymakers, ensuring that they understand the work that we do and the way that it can have or it has and potentially it has in terms of addressing the challenges that we face.
Thank you very much. I think it's going to be the good of all of us. You give us information, which I am taking to the policy makers. So for the national government, it's still the aim as of now. And which I, well, there's another experience that I think we need to identify, because we say most of the democratic people maybe let me put it this way. In South Africa, the one thing that we cannot run away from, I'm not lamenting, is that before 1994, our development was different. And that continues to conduct even now. Now, what's happening is that there are those that want the technical know-how. There are those who don't even know that there was a potential of having the technical know-how. They don't know their potential. And they think that they don't have the technical know-how. Yet they have done things to happen on their own without the other one. But they don't know how important their knowledge has been. Now, the abuse that is happening is that you set up a talking about a project or a one-hour project. And then the person you put there is a person who before 1994, has got the technical know-how. And then he or she closes down those that are there. And she doesn't give them, she or he doesn't give them the information. She or he keeps the information there. If she's not there, or he's not there, everything goes to a perspective. Because they're not empowered, they're not given the power to know that they've got the potential to run the thing. And sometimes you have decided as director, as a deputy director, that it must go to Gorgon. And the people look at their Gorgon, they get led by somebody who's got the technical know-how. And he or she goes down those who are supposed to learn from that. And when you go there, you further. If this person would have rejected the Zama House before 1994, the two people from that day, as in fact, I was listening this morning, they were talking about that they're going to be a law now. They're going to catch those in the BEE. If you take someone to, what's that to the extent of where you you're going to be taken to jail. I mean, you're going to be fined if you defraud. And I'm not sure whether it's going to help us, but it's almost all the same thing to do. Like, you take someone who doesn't know, you put him in a company. You say, no, my company is compliant. Yet, you know, this person knows nothing about this company. You are the one who knows running the company. It's got no impact at all. It's just wanting my fellow friend to be there. Otherwise, my fellow doesn't even know that he's going to get a share in a year. If he didn't get a share, he'll confuse the share. No, he didn't get a share. I think this is where we are. And we're not saying this in a bad way. We're just saying, let's ask the president that we came to choose this. Let's not be paranoid that if I'm not doing it the crooked way, I'm not going to get my benefits. I will get my benefits. You know, even if they improve, they start not, I'll still get my benefits. I don't need to be paranoid that if I allow myself to pay tax, he's going to take my knowledge and take everything. That shouldn't happen. So thank you very much. We are going to meet again. It's a bit, you apologize for this. There's not even drink. There's not even sandwiches. But take it back and take your time to the station and we'll understand you. But we still need you to come back and tell us. Because we have liked you. We have liked you to the station. Thank you very much. Department, thank you very much. I think we'll help by the department getting this appropriate. Because there's no doubt. Thank you very much. Can I know? It's a very big name. Better Kavala for you. Thank you very much. They must separate it now.
Yes.
We must take them outside. My camera is in front. I can hear that. We see, you know, we said for 2 years that keep telling us the level that. So keep it up.
They are important.
They are important.
You would struggle with the
And then the following year in I'm also I think that I'm telling you I just want to say something. You know, when I was on my way back from Ghana, so I was speaking like to Christmas and firstly, I spoke to the mother's issue conference my time. The CSIR are those who incubated that we were then I spoke to Minister of Small Business and she was very happy about that. And she has a caveat that she was watching her friends. And also was saying, for instance, when you go to that check, and when you are in the flight going abroad, you find that they imported butter. And he says, when you see that, ask for the form, the complaint form, so that's why I mean, importing instead of using local people. We are done with the looking, just the
ANC. Oh, okay, sorry, thank you.
The question is for society.
I have a community with good
we need to. Oh, you just want to.
I want to
Parliamentary
Motion.
Okay.
Yes.
So, President, you tell me how much you like. So, on my way back.
Pardon? Yeah, it's just the ANC members. So, what the meeting is finished. The meeting is finished. Get up.